Hey, it's Charlie. Switched on Pop and Vox Media are conducting an annual survey, and it would mean a lot to us if you'd fill it out. It's just 2 or 3 minutes, and it radically helps us improve the show and make it all possible. Head over to voxmedia.com/podsurvey, or just click the link in our show notes to fill it out. Thanks, and now to the show. Welcome to Switched on Pop. I'm songwriter Charlie Harding.
And I'm musicologist Nate Sloan.
And on Switched on Pop, we discuss the making and meaning of popular music. Today, we're going to be speaking with acclaimed musician Emily King. She has been nominated for a Grammy for Best Contemporary R&B Album. She's been recognized by the Songwriters Hall of Fame for excellence in songwriting. And she's just released her latest album called Scenery. We're going to talk about her single, Remind Me. Please join me in welcoming Emily King to the stage.
Yeah.
Thank you. How are you? Hi.
Hi. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Hi, Emily.
Hi. Hi, guys. Hi. How you doing?
So we want to start by just getting this song in our ears. Remind Me is so catchy. We've just been like singing it back and forth to each other.
Let me hear some.
All day. You remind me of something.
Yeah.
Something that I used to feel myself.
Oh my God. Oh, so impressed. I'm so, when people ask me to sing on the spot like that, I am so nervous.
I hate it when people don't ask me.
And you like just nailed it right away. Yeah.
So you'll all have this song stuck in your heads too, probably, but we also think this is more than just a catchy pop song.
Thank you. Okay.
We think a good pop song is almost like a Homeric odyssey in 3 minute form.
Oh my gosh. And tell that to my GED
diploma. We'll see if you agree with our analysis, but let's just kick it off by listening to a little bit of Remind Me.
You remind me of something. Something that I used to feel myself. Something that I used to feel like a heartbeat racing, like a new beginning. You remind me of something else. Something that I used to feel. Something like what I've been missing. Oh, like what I've been missing. Oh, something like. Wow, that was nerve-wracking. Woo, can I breathe?
Emily, what is this song about?
What is this song? Let me remember. I wrote this song, I'm born and raised in New York City, and at one point, about 2 years ago, I was getting just sick and tired of it, and I really needed to change. I also was kind of, my songwriting was a bit stagnant, and I was writing songs very like academically, and I was getting very heady about it, and I'm like, how do I write the perfect song? You know, and obviously when you approach it from that angle, you only have bad songs. And so I thought, my friend came up to me and said, I don't want you to write a perfect song. I want to know how you feel. Huh. And I said, well, damn, that's way harder. And I got to feel things. And so I guess my approach to feeling things was I changed my environment. I moved to upstate New York, about 2 hours north, and I just felt reinvigorated in that moment because I'd never had these experiences before. I had to learn how to drive, and I had to buy a car, pump gas. I was so nervous. I was doing it wrong, and it was thrilling. And within that week, I sat down and I wrote "Remind Me" because I was remembering this thrill of excitement that I hadn't felt in a long time.
I love that because I feel like great songs are a combination of that feeling, you know, of intuition and of songcraft.
Yeah.
I think this song is a great example of that. This song gives you this uncanny, powerful feeling when you listen to it, and it does it through these like incredible songwriting techniques. And for us, this song is all about form and structure, the way the song takes you through from verse to chorus to post-chorus to bridge. So it's all reinforcing that central message of like missing something and finding it. So we want to kind of break down with you maybe how this works for us.
Yeah.
Sound good?
Yeah, I love how you say you didn't want to sit down and write the prototypical perfect song, because I think one of the things that you do here, and we're going to see, is there's all sorts of ways that you bend the rules.
Right.
And it makes it that much better. So it would be appropriate that we start in the verse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I just want to ask you about, typically in a pop song, what do you see as the role of the verse? What is it doing for the song?
Well, you're setting up the story. You're setting up the emotion, the tone, the sentiment. I think when people say something is bad music, for me that's because the emotion didn't really sync up with the melody and the lyric in the appropriate way. When you hear a great song, I think that it has accomplished that, because the way that you sing a melody is a direct connection to how you're feeling. So in this case, the song starts off, you're kind of in a dark place, you know. I've been without it for so long. I forgot what it feels like. When I set out to write the song, I didn't want people to know where the song was going to go.
Great. So I think it'd be appropriate. Let's play the verse to get this in people's ear.
Yeah.
So we can get a sense of, where do we begin?
Been without it for so long. Forgot what it feels like. Been in the darkness till you came along.
Been in the darkness till you came along. It's very powerful.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know quite where I'm going to go.
Well, I can't agree with you.
Hmm?
Yes. No, honestly, I don't know how this stuff happens. I was grateful when the song came to me. And when I started singing that melody, the lyric was, been without a touch so long, forgot what it feels like. And I was going in the direction of a lover, you know, and I thought, that's kind of like putting a ceiling on this emotion. It's not just about that. It's not about that at all, actually, for me in that moment. So I thought, okay, I'm going to take touch away. I've been without it for so long, which can be anything.
Yeah, I love that. So, okay.
I want to listen one more time to that same clip and sort of tune into the production. So really listen in closely, folks.
Been without it. Forgot what it feels like. Been in the darkness.
So Emily, what are we hearing here? What's going on?
I initially wrote the song without chords. I just sang it, which allowed me to take the middleman out of the songwriting of like me trying to find chords. And that felt good. And then I figured out a bass line on the guitar. Then my producer, Jeremy Most, who's in the house tonight, today, where are you? He's like, don't call me out, please.
Playing it cool.
Then he started playing the piano. I thought, we don't use piano that often.
Huh.
But the piano sounds so anthemic. Now it's like making it a bigger, it just sounded bigger, more cinematic to me. And it was a nice way to kind of space out what was going to come in the song, which was more rhythmic energy. Oh!
Spoiler alert. Don't go too far.
I'm kidding.
I know, exactly to your point, we have this basic piano, they're anthemic big chords, but they're just sort of long and built out, and we have guitar, and that's it.
Yeah.
And your voice.
It's very
sparse.
Which
is kind of scary because you want to get people's attention.
Huh.
You know, it's like start with a hook so that they don't leave because our attention span. But it just felt like this is a tale. I'm telling a story. Hopefully they'll stick with me.
And what I'm feeling here is I'm hearing something's missing. And that's in the lyric as well.
Yeah.
Like the production itself is so sparse. And I love that you started without anything but your voice originally, because we need somewhere to go. And I think there is a way in which not starting with the hook and starting with something which is very sparse, we start trying to think, what's going to fill in? Where's this going to take us?
I love music that does that. You know, I know my limitations, so I know where my 100 is at. So I have to make sure that I start like, you know, like really broken down. Yeah, but I love space in music, and I like to take my time.
Yeah, I think that brings us like to the next part of the voyage of this song. And this is interesting because, you know, I think we usually expect that moment when you take it up to 100 to be the chorus of a pop song. Like, I think when what does a chorus mean to you in general?
Yeah, chorus is like, that's ice cream. Like, that's, you know, that's the good stuff. That's sometimes it doesn't matter what the verse is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, some songs, I mean, I could think of so many hooks, but not verses necessarily.
I see. So in the way that when you're eating dessert, it can sometimes erase the memory of the meal that you just had. I totally get that.
You just eating to get to dessert.
So, okay, I totally agree. Chorus is big, anthemic, 100, ice cream with all the toppings.
Ice cream, baby.
But let's listen to your chorus.
You remind me of something. You remind me of something. Something that I used to feel myself. Something that I used to feel. Like a heartbeat racing. Like a new beginning.
Doesn't feel like 100.
It's not 100 yet. We're at 65 right
Yeah,
there.
65.
Yeah.
65. It's a little thicker, right? I feel like the bass came in, added a little more depth.
That's right. You got to have something to keep people's attention. You got, you know, it's building. You're building up to something. You're building up to a climax. Actually, the more challenging verse is the second verse, because you're like, oh, I just gave them everything I have. Now what I do?
So this surprised us when we were listening to the song, because we were like, whoa, this is an anti-chorus or something. It denies you what you expect from the chorus, which is that like moment of apotheosis of like, whoa, I'm getting swept along in this.
Yeah.
We have to wait a little longer for that, right? When does that happen?
Right, it happens late.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's late.
Well, I think you're almost teasing us a little bit, because there is this bass guitar that's like dun 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 dun, and then it's gone. And then it comes back, dun dun. Almost like a heartbeat, like things are catching up.
Like a heartbeat is the lyric.
Boom.
Man, you guys are good.
I did
good.
Not. That
PhD.
Was unintentional. PhD. Armchair musicologist. Real musicologist.
Amazing. It's a good combo.
We don't get what we want. We don't get that sweet ice cream. We don't get
what.
Right now, we're sort of still in the section of what's been missing. We still haven't found what's been missing in the song.
Right.
And we're going to get that, because there is an awakening that happens.
I'm trying so hard, but I can't shake it.
This is an essential moment. This sort of ties everything together. If on one side of the song we're feeling lost, we are going to be found. And I feel like this moment, I can't shake the memory. It feels like, for me, it has this idea of when you have something on the tip of your tongue and it's almost there and you can't find it, and then it arrives.
Yes.
And I think you're almost metaphorizing that in music. For you, what is the effect of having this arrangement fill into the chorus? What's its job?
I couldn't just go from being without it for so long, forgot what it feels like. Oh, like what I've been missing. I felt like I would just sacrifice the emotion, the emotional content. I wanted to relate to people, you know, because I know we all feel that way. So it just needed that second half, you know. Yeah. It just needed to. Now I've told you that I'm sad, and now I'm telling you that I remember what it's like to be happy, and then the hook is the display of joy.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniels, Tennessee Honey, and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
So I think for the audience, we need to give you the full thing. We need that sweet ice cream, that moment of being found. I really dug into this and got so excited by this arrangement, because not only have you taken us on this journey from
being lost to having found that memory. Mm. It's sort of metaphorizing this idea of what it feels like to remember something. It comes into full view. You can see all the details. I'm hearing in the production the same thing happening, not just in the song structure, but also in the individual notes. In the way that the piano, the guitar, and the synthesizer all fill out very distinct parts of the rhythm. They don't step on each other whatsoever. They each have their own space, as if all of the details are colored in. Hmm. I took some liberties, and I, because I didn't have the stems of your track, I just went and recreated it, and it does not sound nearly as good. But only for...
That's so cool!
Yeah. Only for...
It's kind of like the Fisher-Price version of your song.
Thank you for setting
this
Alexa.
This is the remix.
Yeah, yeah. So I just want to play each of these elements coming in. And for our audience, I want you to just zoom in on each section. You're first going to hear the piano, then the guitar, and then the synthesizer. And you'll see they sit in different spaces. Start with the piano. Mm. Long and held out.
Right. Very spacious.
We got the guitar.
Oh,
and the synthesizer.
I love it.
And we're going to slow it down here. Each one sits in its own space.
Hmm.
As if filling in all of the details. You've remembered that moment, and the production has given you a full picture. It's in full color now.
Thank you for that recreation. Give it up.
Thanks.
Thank you. That's awesome.
So I wanted to ask, you know, some artists develop their material in partnership with their producers, and others lay down lyrics after the track is made. I understood in the verse that sort of it sounded like the lyrics came first, but how did you collaborate with your producer, Jeremy Most, in making this track and having these beautiful moments come together?
Well, Jeremy is a brilliant guy, and he plays everything. Hmm. So I'm just lucky because you save bucks for one thing. But second, I mean, he really can create this atmosphere for the song that it needs. And when it came to that hook, I remember one of the shining moments of making this album was when Jeremy started playing slap bass on that hook.
So good.
And I was like, that, because, you know, there were other iterations where it wasn't slap bass, it was just regular bass, which was cool too. But the slap brought this happiness to the song, and not every player can do that.
Yeah, there was a reason why the slap bass didn't make it in the recreation. Not gonna happen. It's really tight.
He has very sensitive thumbs.
I love it. Oh, so cute. So yes, I think Jeremy like completely gave the song the clothing that it wanted to have, and it was a direct connection to the feeling, and I was just so grateful, and that I was just. That was wonderful.
Cool.
Thank you, Jeremy. Where are you at?
Yeah, shout outs to Jeremy Most. As Charlie was saying and illustrating with those clips, it's like everything is interlocking in this really satisfying way. And then the last part of that is your voice. And this is also the moment where your voice becomes like really thick and you layer in all these harmonies as well, vocal harmonies. So it's like, becomes, I think together, that the effect of this section, latter half of the chorus, is like just this sense of everything coming together, and like it's the musical idea of locating that missing thing, right?
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I don't really belt out music often. This was a challenge for me because I just heard that it required that type of singing. Oh, like what I've been missing. Oh, like I was kicking my own ass.
Yeah.
I would have much preferred to sing that in a softer way, but it just required that energy. And so it kind of took me to a different level as a singer, but it did. I just envisioned, a choir. It felt like very much gospel influence. And so I had to do all those layers. But I remember the challenging part was trying to figure out how to approach those phrases, because at first they were very syncopated. And then I realized that the surprise of the second O coming in a little bit early gave it this jolt, like, how does it go? Oh, like what I've been missing. Oh, something like what oven is this? So like that took me a few days to try to figure that out.
That's really cool.
We were just talking backstage with our friend Joe, who is a musician, and he was saying an old adage that a teacher had taught him, which was that rhythm is like an addiction. And once you get the rhythm, you want more of it, and you want like different, but you want it to like change and excite you. And there's a way in which having that change, and all of a sudden you bring a phrase early when you expect it to come later, you're like, it's so satisfying.
It was satisfying to me. I was worried that it would kind of not be as catchy as maybe something that was completely, like the first thing was repeated as the second. But I
like
love surprise.
Walking proof of how catchy it is.
Oh, thank you.
Let's see, we've gone through verse, we've gone through chorus, we've gone through the post-chorus. This brings us now to our favorite part of a song, which is...
the end. Thank God. It took forever.
Which is the bridge.
The bridge.
What role does the bridge play in your songwriting?
The role of the bridge is to break up the song
with
just enough time that you're not sick of it yet.
That's a great definition. The bridge is, I like that. The bridge is the part in the song when you're like, okay, I've been hearing the same stuff for like 2.5 minutes.
Exactly. Let me take a bathroom break. No.
Little palate cleanser.
But that's a very cynical take on a bridge. I love bridges because it gives you a chance for variation in a song, and it also gives you a chance to shine a light on an emotion that hasn't been expressed yet. The bridge came last. Sometimes the bridge comes first. Huh. It's a necessary part in a song.
Let's hear it. Gives us a new harmonic content, new lyrics, and it's a different lyrical approach, right? It's a little darker. It's like the idea of losing this thing that you just found.
It's kind of sad. I found something. Yeah. I didn't have it, then I found it, and now we're in the bridge, and it slipped away.
I was dumbfounded. What else do I have to say? And I went to Jeremy because he's the poet of the family, of the musical family, and I said, I don't know what to say here. And then he's like, you want me to do it? I said, yeah, just do it. So it almost slipped away. You're reiterating, the bridge reiterates what you're trying to say in the story, but you have to be clever about it.
Well, I feel like in this case, it gives you like this note of suspense right before what you imagine is going to be like one more chorus, right? So in order so that final chorus doesn't feel just inevitable, but like earned and meaningful, you need to introduce like, but let me introduce some doubt into the song.
That's an interesting way to put it.
And then we're going to squash that doubt.
It is. It's like, okay, maybe it's not good yet.
Yeah.
Maybe we're not going to get out of this mess.
And then this is another crazy moment that we come to post-bridge. Because I think what we're expecting is that quashing. Is like, no, don't worry. It's not going to slip away. We're back. Here's our sick, thick chorus with all these different instruments and harmonized vocals. Is that what happens? Let's find out.
You remind me of something. You remind me of something. Something that I used to feel myself. Something that I used to feel like a heartbeat.
That's kind of bleak, honestly. Yeah. it's the chorus, which we're familiar with, but it's like the most stripped down, sparsest version of the chorus yet, with just piano and vocals. And it's kind of, it's a little unsettling. It's because it's if the song ended right there, it would be I think you would come away with a very different lasting impression, right?
Absolutely. I think this, I guess what this was trying to do was I've sort of been telling a story to someone else, perhaps, and this was more, I'm looking in the mirror at myself.
Huh.
You remind me of something, It's much more introspective version of that.
Whoa.
Nate's face has
Oh, come on.
Fallen off.
This guy.
That's amazing. I love that. Okay, but it doesn't end there.
Does not.
No.
No. I like a happy ending.
All right, let's hear it. Feel something like what I've been missing.
You get that beautiful moment of awakening again.
Oh, God.
It's wonderful.
Oh, yeah, I forgot the...
And then it goes back down.
Yeah, that's true.
That.
Other
there's a brief pause. Like, are we
right.
going to get it?
Oh, yeah, right.
And then it comes in. It's gorgeous.
That's a, yeah.
You guys are funny, man.
We really like this stuff. I love this bridge, false chorus into full post-chorus. It almost it takes the whole structure of the song, everything that we experienced before, the missing something and finding it, and gives it to you at a nice little executive summary at the end. But it's also doing something, this is where I was saying, I think you haven't written the prototypical perfect pop song. I think you've written the perfect pop song for the message that you're trying to get convey. And it needed this, what I'm calling a down chorus, this section where you don't get the chorus that you think you're going to get at the end. And it's something that I don't hear that often, but I went looking for some other examples. Is the down chorus a thing? So I wanted to play some other stuff that we're hearing in the top 40 that has used this idea often to very different effect. So we're going to listen to Zedd and Maren Morris's Middle. Oh, baby,
why don't you just be baby? Down chorus.
Down chorus.
Very sparse.
We're going to blend it.
And then... full chorus.
Nice.
Fun.
Okay.
Hearing this as well on Sam Smith and Normani's Dancing with a Stranger, this is sort of a slow build house track.
Okay.
Look what you made me do. Sparse.
Full. So it's a great moment there as well. Sam Smith raises his voice a whole octave and sings the whole thing higher. And so
gorgeous.
Everything builds up. So you have that down chorus and the full chorus. And finally, I think our show would be incomplete if we didn't play a song from one of our favorite artists of all time. We're just going to roll a clip. Is it cool that I said all that? Is it chill that you're in my head? Because I know that it's so that's Taylor Swift's Delicate. And
that
you
track
can,
is fire, though.
Yeah.
It is fire, right? In fact, she uses this to a very different effect. I think she actually, all of her choruses are down choruses. There's all these really small, quiet moments until finally at the end of the song, you finally get the whole thing.
Well, does it come from the dance floor? They do that all the time, you know. Oh, break it down, break it down. Ooh, is it going to go? It's coming back up!
The breakdown, definitely.
Yeah. I think it's just, we just want variation.
Uh-huh.
And I learned from performing that if you start on 100, you have nowhere to go, just like what we were talking about.
Right.
So you have to really build, pace yourself.
But that's so cool because it's not, it's evidence that like something is happening to the fundamental structure of a pop song in which the chorus is always big, expansive, bright. Like we are in a new moment where you and all these other artists are like, changing how we think about the chorus.
That's awesome.
It
is. That's. I mean, I have nothing to do with it, but I probably stole from Taylor Swift.
Our job is to tell you what you do.
I think it's fun to play with the dynamic.
Yeah.
If the song was about something else, maybe I would have done something else. But I don't know what else to say about it. You guys made me feel so good.
Yeah.
I don't think I've written. My best song, hopefully not. And there's so much magic that is involved, and you really, it's strange. It's like you giving birth to something and then taking credit for the child's success, you know. Huh. People would look down on a parent that did that, right?
I've never thought of it that way.
I think this is such a gorgeous song. It shows us that the structure of a 3-minute pop song, verse, chorus, post-chorus, bridge, chorus, chorus, all that has so much room for creativity. You have actually superimposed this idea of remembering something into that canvas of the pop song and show that there's so much room for creativity within it. I want to say thank you so much for
being
on the show.
Thank you so much.
We also want to thank Aloft Hotels for making this possible. And
yes.
This has been just absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you guys for coming.
Hey, just one more thing before we run credits. We're actually running an annual survey with Vox Media to help us make a better show and to find new ways to support it in the long term. It would mean a lot to me if you'd fill it out. It's at voxmedia.com/podsurvey, or you can just click the link in the show notes. It means a lot. Thanks. Switched on Pop is a production of Vox Media. Our producer is Jillian Weinberger, engineering by Brandon McFarland, and our community manager is Sarah Terry. Our executive producers are Nishat Kurwa and Allison Rocky. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Switched on Pop, and please send us your thoughts and recommendations. We really like to interact there, and we turn lots of your ideas into shows. We're going to be back again in another week, and until then, thanks for listening.